Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Heirloom Murders by Kathleen Ernst, narrated by Elise Arsenault. 1.
The guy tried using a pistol?
Relky McKenna asked as he opened his locker door. It was almost 8 in the morning. He was coming on shift. Skeet Deerdorf was going off. Relky always arrived at the Eagle police station early enough to catch up on news.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Skeet was laughing so hard he could hardly speak. The phone rang, and he waited until Marie answered it before gasping in a lower voice.
He couldn't loosen the lug nut with a wrench, so he figured a shot or two would...
Marie's hand sliced the air so fiercely that Skeet stopped talking. She swiveled her chair to face the officers. Relky's nerves snapped to full alert. In the sudden silence, she said,
"Ma'am, I'm sorry. I've got some static on the line. Can you repeat what you just said?"
Then she pressed the speakerphone button. A woman's voice
said, "I'm about to kill myself."
Jesus. Relky snatched a daily report form and pen from a nearby desk and scrawled, "Where?" Before he could even thrust it at Marie, she was asking, "Where are you, ma'am?"
"I'll tell you in a moment," the caller said.
Skeet fumbled for his duty belt. Relky grabbed a radio.
"Please, ma'am, let's talk about this," Marie said. "I might be able to help. Can you tell me your name?"
"My name is Bonnie, but..."
"I'm Marie. Can you tell me a little about whatever is bothering you?"
"I appreciate what you're trying to do," Bonnie said. "Really, but there's nothing to discuss."
Relky reached for the car keys. The hook was empty. Where were the damn keys?
"I'm only calling because I want the police to get here first."
Bonnie sounded youngish. 25, maybe? 30?
"I'm in a public place. I don't want kids to find me."
Relky rifled the counter below the key hook. Papers sank to the floor with a languid rocking motion. Skeet snapped his fingers, then held up the keys. Relky snatched them.
"I'm driving a Cadillac Cimarron," Bonnie said.
"You'll find my wallet on top of the left front tire. I removed my credit cards, but left my ID. My keys will be in the right pocket of my jacket."
Relky felt the seconds ticking by with frenzied impatience. He stared at Marie, willing her to find a way to stop this. Marie spread her hands in a helpless gesture, but said,
"Please, Bonnie, just tell me where you are."
"I have a plastic garbage bag with me. I'll be as tidy as possible."
Relky closed his eyes. He could feel Skeet quivering in the doorway beside him.
"Bonnie, please give us the chance to help you."
Marie was clutching a pen so hard that her knuckles were white.
"If you just wait until one of our officers can get there. Please tell the officer that I'm sorry."
An audible breath in, out.
"I'll be 300 paces up the White Oak Trail."
Relky and Skeet bolted outside. Relky slid behind the wheel of the squad car and was almost out of the parking lot before Skeet got his door closed. The White Oak Trail was a short loop in the Kettle Moraine State Forest. 12 minutes tops, Relky thought.
"Call it in," he told Skeet.
Marie would do it if she could, but there was still a chance that Marie would be able to keep Bonnie on the phone. To keep Bonnie talking. To keep Bonnie alive. Skeet radioed for backup. Waukesha County, Department of Natural Resources, Eagle Fire and Rescue. Relky switched on the flashers. He shot through a stop sign, then veered around a pickup that was too slow to yield.
"Hit the siren,"
Skeet urged as they left the village behind. He sat with feet and arms braced.
"No!"
Relky's hands tightened on the wheel as they flew around a curve on Highway 59.
"Maybe she's having second thoughts. If she hears us coming, she might pull the trigger."
"She didn't sound like she might have second thoughts."
"There's always a chance. Hold on."
Relky braked hard and turned onto a side road. The small parking area that marked the White Oak Trailhead was ahead on the right. Gravel flew as he swerved into the lot. A white Cimarron sat in the shade of a huge old oak tree. No one was in sight.
"Tell the EMTs to stage around the bend," Relke said as he pulled in beside the car.
Maybe there was still time. Maybe, maybe, maybe.
He jumped from the squad, leaving the door open, still worried about noise, and hit the trail at a run.
20 steps.
97. 132. At 186, he rounded a bend and stopped abruptly.
God damn it.
The body lay on the trail beside an old stump and a clump of ferns. Sunlight sifting through the canopy dabbled the garbage bag that partly shrouded the woman's head and shoulders. Jean-clad legs, feet in yellow high-heeled leather sandals with thin straps, extended from the bag. The woman's left hand was visible too, resting against the earth, palm down. Her wedding band glittered with tiny diamonds. The top of the garbage bag was not intact. Shreds of brown plastic and gray matter splattered the dirt and dead leaves nearby. Relke crouched on the right side of the body and carefully pulled aside what was left of the bag. He instinctively reached to check her pulse, but there was nothing left beneath her jaw to touch. In almost any circumstance, he would begin CPR, but in this case, God damn it! He exploded again. A 9mm Smith & Wesson had fallen from Bonnie's hand and lay near her throat. Skeet emerged from the trees and skidded to a halt. He stared for a moment, then leaned over, hands on knees, panting. Relke didn't know if the other man was struggling with heat or exertion or nausea. Relke was struggling with searing rage.
"I could have helped you," he muttered. "If you'd just given me a chance, I could have helped you."
In half an hour, Relke had carefully photographed the scene, tucked the handgun and shell casing into evidence bags, and established a perimeter. The medical examiner, a pudgy man with dispassionate eyes, arrived and did his own assessment of the body and its surroundings. Then he and Relke watched two EMTs secure the body in a Stokes basket for transport to the parking lot. Bonnie had positioned the gun under her chin, damaging the airway and eliminating any chance of keeping the physical body resuscitated long enough to harvest organs for donation. Marge Bandicek, a Waukesha County deputy, sidled closer.
"You want me to call in our evidence team?"
Relke shook his head.
"No need." "We've got better equipment." "No need,"
Relke repeated. As first on the scene, he'd taken command. He'd examined the area carefully, collected everything there was to collect, documented everything there was to document. Marge opened her mouth, as if about to argue. Relke fixed her with a stare. Although he'd bundled his anger deep inside, it hadn't diminished. This was state forest land, but the DNR responders weren't second-guessing him. He was in no mood to take any crap from Marge Bandicek. Marge hitched up her belt as the EMTs began their march back to the ambulance.
"If you say so."
Relke waited until the parade had disappeared and took one last look around. The police tape looked obscene in this peaceful place of greens and browns. He pounded one fist against his leg and turned away. Back at the parking lot, Skeet was handling the scene log.
"Have you searched the car?"
Relke asked.
"Not yet," Skeet said. "Traffic control, including a couple of reporters."
"Piranhas," Relke muttered. He didn't hate the press. He did hate reporters who thought it was okay to, in this case, broadcast a shot of Bonnie's car before the cops had a chance to reach the family.
"I'll ask Bandicek to handle them."
After sicking Marge on the press, Relke searched the caddy.
"Simon and Bonnie Sabatola," he read from the vehicle registration.
The form listed a Town of Eagle address. What he did not find was Bonnie Sabatola's wallet.
"That's odd."
"What?" Skeet asked.
"She said she'd leave her wallet on top of the left front tire. It isn't there. It's not in the car either." Skeet leaned against the oak tree, folding his arms. The woman was about to blow her brains out. I don't suppose she was thinking clearly. Clearly enough that she didn't want anyone but us to find her.
Relke turned away and scanned the gravel near the car. Nothing. He moved out in widening circles, moving the tall grasses bordering the lot with his foot. Still nothing. Finally, he spotted an unnatural patch of brown along the trail, almost invisible against the leaf litter.
Got it. Hers? Skeet called. He hadn't bothered to move from the shade.
Relke flipped the wallet open. The coin pocket and bill slot were empty. Three of the four little credit card-sized sleeves were empty, too. The fourth held a Wisconsin driver's license. Relke stared at Bonnie Sabatola's picture. Her face was thin and elegant, her chestnut hair obviously styled with care. Her expression seemed to hold something more than the blind stare he usually found in driver's license pictures. Birth date? July 21st, 1954. She had killed herself 1 week after her 28th birthday. Bonnie Sabatola had been the same age he was.
"Why did you do this?" he asked her silently. "What made you lose all hope?"
The Emmy waddled from the woods.
"That her license?"
"Yeah."
Relke handed it over. The other man scrutinized it for a moment, then handed it back.
"No doubt on the ID. Approximate time of death is consistent with the call she made to your office. I'll go through the motions, but the cause of death was obviously a self-inflicted gunshot wound."
The DNR ranger on the scene stopped a Chevy that had slowed to turn into the lot and spoke through the window to the driver. Skeet straightened, dusting off his trousers.
"Listen, do you mind if I catch a ride back to the station? I can still make class on time. You'll handle this, right?"
"Handle it. The death notification. The paperwork."
"I'll handle it," Relke said. "But something isn't right." "The wallet? Listen, she just tossed it on her way down the trail. It doesn't mean anything."
Skeet waved a hand in a vague gesture of dismissal.
"The steps were off, too."
Skeet sighed.
"What?"
He had ginger hair and a pale complexion that betrayed his impatience.
"The steps," Relke repeated. "She said she'd be 300 paces up the trail. I found her at 186.
"So what? You were running. No way her strides were as long as yours. I'll see you tomorrow."
Skeet headed toward the ME's sedan.
"Hey, Sid, give me a ride?"
Relke watched them go. Skeet was a family man who still found time to take college classes in Waukesha. That might well put him on top when the next full-time permanent job opened up. The police department in Eagle, Wisconsin was tiny. Relke was committed to the department and to the village he had come to care so much about. But opportunities for advancement were few and far between. Then he stared back at the driver's license in his hand, at Bonnie Sabatola's enigmatic face, and his ambitions and worries disappeared. He looked again at the Cimarron, the clearing, the trailhead. Bonnie must have stood right there, by the little shed that housed the toilets, where a payphone had been installed on the exterior wall. She'd already walked away from her car and was halfway to the trailhead. So why had she told Marie that she'd leave her wallet on the tire?
2. Good Lord!
Chloe Ellefson's jaw dropped with dismay as she climbed the final steps and emerged into the attic.
"Geez, Dellen, when you asked for my help, you didn't mention we'd need a backhoe."
Her friend winced.
"Don't abandon me now. I'm begging you."
Dellen Burke wiped sweat from her forehead. The attic was broiler hot. Chloe pulled a string dangling from a light fixture and was immediately sorry. The bulb's sickly yellow glow only accentuated the bewildering assortment of stuff. A butter churn, 3 dressmaker's dummies, chairs upholstered in chintz and horsehair, several trunks,
a cradle, and boxes. Hundreds of boxes, pushed low under the eaves and piled high beneath the crest of the ceiling. Dellen clutched her elbows, crossing her arms across her chest. She was shorter than Chloe, and younger, too. Late 20s, probably, to Chloe's 32. She wore paint-spotted jeans and a faded t-shirt that might once have been blue. Her hair was pulled into a simple ponytail. She was lovely in a straightforward way. A woman who didn't waste energy on what didn't matter, like makeup. But her expression was strained. "In the interest of full disclosure," Dellen said finally, "I should tell you that you haven't seen half of it. There's twice this much stuff in the barn, and my dad's study is crammed too." "Collection obsession," Chloe said bleakly, then immediately wished she hadn't. "I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that." Dellen's parents had died suddenly in a car crash only a few months earlier. Dellen touched a child's rocking horse, setting it in motion. "It's okay. But most of these aren't family heirlooms. My parents helped found the Eagle Historical Society. Oh, probably 20 years ago. They were only collecting stuff until the society can afford a building of its own." "That was a good goal," Chloe said charitably. Dellen nudged the rocking horse with her toe, keeping it moving. "Both of my parents grew up in Eagle. They did more to preserve and protect this village's history and heritage than anyone. Once they began talking about starting a little museum, well, people started giving them stuff. My folks didn't know how to say no to anyone. Things obviously, got out of hand." "Well, I can understand that. I got a call at work yesterday from someone who said that she had a lot of valuable antiques she was sure Old World Wisconsin would want. But if I didn't come take them that afternoon, she was putting them out for the garbage collector." Dellen shook her head. "I wouldn't want your job. I'm much happier collecting seeds. They're small." "Small sounds good," Chloe agreed wistfully. "And to think I took the curator of collections job because I thought working with artifacts would be easier than working in education." She'd only been employed at the huge outdoor ethnic museum on the outskirts of Eagle for about 2 months, but she'd quickly learned that collections work had its own share of problems. Dellen shoved her hands in her pockets. "I shouldn't have asked for your help." "It's okay," Chloe said quickly. She'd been glad to give up her lunch hour when Dellen had asked. It felt good to be needed. Besides, Dellen was nice. Chloe had been in short supply of friends lately. "I just don't know what to do with all this," Dellen's voice rose. "I have no idea what's valuable and what isn't." "There's monetary value, and there's historical value," Chloe said. "But first, who actually owns this stuff? Did your parents legally transfer it to the Eagle Historical Society?" "No, that was the plan for one day." "That's good." Chloe lifted the flap on the closet box. Flow blue china, packed in straw. She tucked the flap back into place. "You're free to cull." "I definitely want to save whatever might be of value to Eagle." Dellen leaned against a dresser, smudging a fur of dust. But? "I'm pretty tight on cash right now." Dellen began swiping dust from furniture. "I'm an artist, for God's sake. It took everything I had just to move back here from Seattle." "Ah. My parents left me the house and its contents, but they didn't have any real savings. My sister and her husband paid for the funeral. If there are even a few things I could sell with a clear conscience, things that have no meaning for Eagle's history, I mean, it would help. A lot." Chloe could relate. Her own job at Old World Wisconsin was a permanent one, with benefits and a reasonable salary. But although Dellen was head gardener at the historic site, she was an LTE, a limited-term employee with the state. Low salary, no benefits, no security. "You never know," Chloe said, striving for a cheery tone. "People find treasures in their attics all the time.
Maybe I'll find the Eagle Diamond.
Beg pardon?
Delin waved a hand. I forget you're not local. About a century ago, some guy digging a well in town found this huge diamond. No way. Don't diamonds come from Africa?
Not this one, Delin insisted. It's a true story. My dad was collecting information for a book, and this woman I know just published an article about it.
So, where is this diamond?
It disappeared. It was stolen, but nobody really knows where it ended up.
Delin smiled ruefully.
You figure my dad might have gotten his hands on it and socked it away?
Probably not. Let's just settle for something antique collectors are hungry for. An ambrotype of Abe Lincoln. A signed first edition of The Jungle Book. Betsy Ross's girlhood sampler. Something to give you a little pocket change.
Chloe scanned the attic again.
Did your parents keep records?
Knowing provenance, where an item came from, how it was used, will make a big difference in deciding what to keep.
I think so. It's probably all down in the study.
Chloe slapped her palms against her thighs. Well, let's see if we can find the records. Once we do, we'll just start sorting.
Thank you.
Delin's shoulders slumped with relief. I didn't even know where to begin. I want to show you the barn later, too. There's a lot of agricultural stuff out there. Some of it might work nicely for the garden fair at Old World.
Chloe regarded her. Don't take this wrong, but what on earth compelled you to propose a new special event? You've only been on staff for what? A month more than me? I'm still learning people's names.
I just thought it would be a nice idea to showcase the historic site's heirloom vegetables and flowers.
Delin's tone was both defensive and apologetic.
I want to help visitors understand how much diversity we've lost and how important fairs were to 19th century families.
Oh, it's a great idea, Chloe assured her. It's just ambitious for someone who already has more work than she can handle.
I've got some great volunteers to help. One in particular, Harriet Van Dyne. Have you met her?
And the interpreters are excited.
Delin cocked her head.
I think a car just pulled into the driveway.
Chloe followed Delin down the stairs gratefully. By the time they descended to the ground floor, the temperature had dropped by at least 20 degrees. Chloe lifted her long blonde hair and held it massed on top of her head, wishing she'd been smart enough to pin it up that morning. Maybe Delin had some iced tea or lemonade in the fridge.
Oh, God.
Delin froze in front of the screen door.
What?
Something prickled nervously over Chloe's skin.
Delin, what's wrong?
Delin didn't answer. Chloe peered over her friend's shoulder and saw a police car in the driveway. Officer Relke McKenna was walking up the sidewalk, followed by a second man she didn't recognize, a man wearing a clerical collar.
Oh, God,
Delin whispered again. Relke's eyes widened when he saw Chloe, but he masked his surprise quickly and focused on Delin.
Miss Delin Burke? He asked.
Delin grabbed Chloe's hand.
Yes?
I'm Officer McKenna, and this is Reverend Otis. May we come in?
Delin didn't move. Chloe gently pulled her backward so Relke could open the door. The four of them stood in the narrow hall. The walls were lined with old family photos, making the space feel even more crowded.
You are Bonnie Sabatola's sister?
Relke asked. Delin nodded, her eyes wide. This is going to be bad, Chloe thought. Bad, bad, bad. 3. 1876.
Let's go, Charles Wood said brusquely. The day's getting away.
He grabbed his pickaxe.
You're welcome, Albrecht Bachmeier thought.
Sure. Neighbors helped neighbors, and Charles was paying him a bit. But was a word of thanks too much to ask?
Digging a well on a hot day was harsh work. The two men had dug through almost 10 feet of loose gravel the day before,
And here, Albrecht was again neglecting his own chores, giving Charles a hand. Charles began climbing down the shaft. Albrecht glanced toward the house. Clarissa Wood was turning sod with a shovel for a vegetable garden behind the small log house. Her dress was already dark with sweat. Her sweet face was hidden beneath her sunbonnet. She used one foot to force her shovel blade into the earth. It took obvious effort to toss the slice of sod aside. Albrecht felt his fingers tighten on the shovel in his hands, aching, actually aching to turn his back on Charles and help Clarissa instead. She was a thin thing, game for work, but not strong. It would probably be easier for Charles to dig a well alone than for Clarissa to dig her garden.
"You coming?"
Charles called.
"Yeah,"
Albrecht barked back. Taking one last look, he grabbed the rope and started backing into the pit. 4. 8 hours after leaving Dellen Burke's house, Relke hesitated, his hand on the phone in his apartment. Should he call Chloe? Yes, he should. No, he should not. Damn it, he muttered, and dialed the familiar number. There was a time, after he'd met Chloe in June, when he would have simply driven to her house, wanting to see for himself that she was okay. No way could he do that now. Not with Alpine Boy in the picture. While the phone rang, Relke stepped to the window of his tiny apartment. It was early evening. After the shock of seeing Chloe standing beside Dellen Burke that afternoon, Relke had done what he needed to do at the house and back at the station. Now he was off duty. A pleasant twilight was slowly descending on the village of Palmyra, where he lived. It would be a good time to walk to his cousin Libby's house, see her kids, play t-ball, grill brats, and try to forget about Bonnie Sabatola and Dellen Burke. But first... Hello? She sounded a little breathless. Had she run from outside? Or was Alpine Boy... Hello? Chloe said again. She sounded more impatient than breathless now.
It's me. Can I come by?
Sure. Relke felt a tight place in his chest unwind a notch.
See you in a few, he said, and hung up before she could change her mind.
Chloe lived in an old farmhouse in the next county, a pleasant 15-minute drive through the Kettle Moraine State Forest. Relke found her sitting on her front porch, a glass of what he was pretty sure was diet soda and rum in her hand. Hey, Chloe said and raised the glass. You want anything?
I want to make sure you're okay.
Was that too personal? Avoiding her gaze, Relke latched onto something else.
Why do you have a piece of moldy wood on your porch rail?
She gave him an exasperated look. It's not mold. It's lichen. I brought it home because it's beautiful.
Okay?
He settled into the empty lawn chair beside her. Maybe he should clarify his first remark.
I want to make sure you're okay after what happened this afternoon.
Chloe sipped, staring out over the hayfield across the street. She was still too thin. The angular planes of her face were accentuated because she'd pinned her braided hair in a twist behind her head. Relke couldn't imagine a more beautiful woman. I'm all right, she said finally, looking back at him. Just sad for Dellen. And Bonnie, too, of course.
Did you know Bonnie?
No. She blew out a long, slow breath. After you left, Dellen kept saying, I'm all alone now. It's horrible. After her parents...
Yeah.
Relke sighed.
Did she say anything about why her sister might have done such a thing?
He'd asked a few perfunctory questions while at the house, but hadn't wanted to press. She has no idea. She'd been living in Seattle and only came back after her parents died. Dellen's a painter and a gardener. Bonnie was an executive's wife. I guess they didn't have much in common anymore. Chloe lifted one slender hand in a gesture of futility.
But Dellen was already feeling guilty for...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?